Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Incubator Podcast. This is your co-host, Sabir Saran.
And this is Darren Boyd. And today we are delighted to have Fayaz Shaparwala join us on the podcast. He's the Chief Product and Strategy Officer at Fortanix. If you think of Fortanix, I think one thing comes to mind, which is encryption supremacy. We're gonna break down what that means, but Fortanix is taking on encryption in a way that most don't. And so maybe Fayaz, we could start by you giving an introduction to yourself, why you joined Fortanix as the Chief Product and Strategy Officer, and a little bit of what Fortanix does before we break into some of the categories and go much deeper.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. So just in terms of a quick background on myself, you know, I've been with Fortanix now coming up on 4 years, have been associated with the company since the beginning as an advisor, and the company's up on 6 years. Previously before this, I was at IBM running IBM Cloud. And then before that, I was at Cisco, a long career there and various roles, last gig being also building Cisco's cloud. What excited me about Fortanix and why I came here is because when I was running, I met them when I was running, building Cisco cloud. And we were working with a customer, a big telecom customer in Germany, who was also a partner, and in Germany had, you know, much higher standards for security at the time than GDPR. And so they had all of those requirements. And I met them, and there was this company that was working on encrypting data in use, which is what I needed. Unfortunately, at the time, they didn't have a product. They had a business plan, and they were raising money. But that's when I met him. And then when I went to IBM, clearly, you know, we had 60 data centers. On a regular basis, you're getting, you know, DDoS, and people are, you know, you're getting compromised, and these are nation state attacks, you know, that are happening. I was thinking about, like, how do we help customers protect themselves, right? Because if they get compromised, then your business is compromised if they get to your data, right? And that's the problem that Fortanix was solving with this whole notion of confidential computing and, you know, data encryption in use. And so I brought them in IBM. We were OEMing the product over there. And then when I left IBM, I decided that, you know, there was an opportunity here to actually build a real company, given data security is becoming so front and center with things moving to cloud, moving to SaaS, right? Everywhere, your data is going everywhere and you have to protect it, right? And so how do you do that simplistically, but in a very secure manner? And that's kind of what, you know, Fortanix was solving. So that was the exciting opportunity for me. And that's why I'm here.
Awesome. Awesome, Fayaz. So with all that background, Fayaz, if you can understand or explain how Fortanix has advanced this whole concept and this whole space of encryption. And again, it's all concepts that we're all have heard in terms of HSM, key management, DSM, acceleration, things of that nature. But so what is the core problem that Fortanix is solving, and how are you going about it?
Yeah, no, good question. And of course, I think our at a macro level, the reason for our existence is that to help customers really secure their data, from an, you know, throughout their entire life cycle. And what does that mean? Meaning, you know, as I was saying earlier, customers are moving, data is growing at an exponential rate, and data is very transitory, right? You're migrating to cloud, you're migrating to SaaS, you have your data going everywhere, and you have a legal obligation, a compliance obligation to make sure you protect that data for your customers, you know, because you're running on shared infrastructure outside. You got to make sure even if they get compromised, you're not compromised, or your customers are not compromised. So how do you do that, right? And so for us, that was the kind of simple problem statement of, like, hey, data is going to cloud, data is going into SaaS, data is, of course, on-prem. How do we help them? How do we help them secure it through its entire life cycle? And then to kind of solve that problem, we said, what is the high bar? So we leveraged this kind of, we pioneered this area of confidential computing, where really, you know, we had heard about data at rest, we'd heard about data in motion. But when you talk about data in use, like when you're running something in cloud, and if somebody compromises your VM, right? Like, people can break into your server, they can effectively, they'll scan your memory, and then, you know, they have your credentials. So how do you protect against that? And confidential compute protects against that by encrypting, you know, data and use. So we want to make sure we protect the entire lifecycle, you know, at rest, in motion and in use, right? The leveraging the power of confidential computing. And what is the big driver for it? I mean, I think, of course, the motion to cloud and motion to SaaS is a big driver, right? Why customers need this. But more importantly, regulations. So if you're in Europe, you know, you have Schrems II. And Schrems II requires that when you go to cloud, your data has to be encrypted. You know, you have to be in possession of the keys, right? So cloud key management becomes a very important use case for us there. In US, like we're sitting in California, California has CCPA, right? Then we have laws in New York and Florida and Colorado. Now, all of these now laws require that your PII data, your social security number, your credit card information, things that you provide on a regular basis to various retailers and healthcare providers, et cetera, that data has to be masked or obfuscated, right? It cannot be kind of kept in the clear in a database, because if that gets compromised, then, you know, people's data gets compromised. So these are the kinds of problem statements that customers have, and we are basically trying to make it easy through one platform to help them kind of, you know, have a provide a seamless way of basically protecting all this data with a kind of architectural approach, right? So that's what we're doing in a nutshell.
Thanks, Fayaz. If I may, Darren, let me build on a concept here. Being that, you know, encryption is, let's say, the fundamental basis, or should be the fundamental basis for everything here, why are organizations or enterprises not really placing this at the forefront? Whereas, you know, if you have a strong encryption structure, and I'm not saying organizations don't, but it feels like it's just taken for granted, perhaps, or assumed, whereas organizations ought to be revisiting this in a more strategic way across, again, their SaaS platforms, across multi-cloud architectures, to say, how are we doing it? Where are our keys? And, you know, again, if we can limit all of that, again, we limit that blast radius right away. We can control the breaches at the lowest common denominator, if you will.
Exactly. And look, I mean, I think it's a fair point, and I think it's going to change, right? And the two reasons for it. I mean, in the past, regulated industries have always scared. So if you're in financial services and healthcare, there's been regulation that really, you know, drove them to, so they get it. They have a maturity model that you know, supports encrypting data wherever the data might be. But for the rest of the organizations, I think, you know, now two things are happening. One is, of course, more regulation is coming in. So, and every country is, you know, has some form of a GDPR like law. So now everybody's kind of looking at it more seriously, and there are implications in terms of penalties, et cetera, right? And, you know, more than the penalties itself, I mean, there's a massive kind of brand issue if you get compromised. I mean, if you just saw yesterday, you know, Facebook had to pay has to pay $1.3 billion in Europe for privacy violations, right? So that's a big slap over there. So, I mean, I think the amount of ransomware that has been happening over the last, you know, multiple years, customers are definitely, you know, figuring out that, okay, they need to get serious about this area. And the other thing that's also changing, which is helping, is in the past, when you looked at, like, you know, you guys probably have heard a lot about the zero trust architecture. So now White House kind of mandated that, you know, a year or two when the Biden government came in. And now there's an architecture. Now, in the zero trust architecture, initially, it did not even have zero trust data architecture. It only had, so people were very focused on like endpoint security, just on endpoint security or identity and access management, et cetera, right? But at the end of the day, the bad guys are getting in is because they're after your data. If you don't protect your data, it doesn't matter by just protecting your periphery, right? So now with this, the next version of the zero trust architecture, ZTE, there is a section on kind of data architecture. And so I think now there is a lot more, again, you know, visibility and most of the companies are looking at it, right? More, I would say, in a holistic manner, architecture level, versus like in the past where it's just been a point thing, you know? So I think it's going to change in a good way, you know, for in kind of the coming months and years.
So I when I think of everything that you're doing, I think it gets really interesting because of the areas you focus in, I think you do things at a scale and with a simplicity to it that I think anybody living in the space would really, really appreciate. So for example, even if you look at one aspect of what Fortanis can do from an HSM or key management or, you know, secrets management, the ability to allow you to kind of command and take over as the central control plane for all of the different solutions out there that have some of these parts and pieces is really interesting. And then you overlay on top of that some very complex workflows from a threat management perspective. You provide kill switch capabilities. Your architecture itself lends itself to very, very high throughput applications. And that's just, quote unquote, in the kind of key management, secret management space. And you work across all sorts of different domains. What can you somehow quantify all of the places that Fortanix has become this, like I said, encryption supremacy? I'm not downplaying that term. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely doing encryption at a scale and with a management layer that very few could truly follow. But if I look at it, it's the pieces I just described. Then it's the in-use. It's all the secure enclaves. It's the stuff you're doing from a ML AI model perspective. It's like data masking and tokenization. I actually want to go down as well. You know, we're doing various engagements in that space. So you're doing all of these things. So how do I get my head around, how does somebody look at Fortanix and truly appreciate all of the areas that you play at the level you play? How would you orient an audience member on that?
Yeah, it's look, I think, you know, firstly, at a mission statement, you know, making our focus is making, you know, data security simple, which is hard, right? Meaning making it so that a CISO in the organization who's kind of, you know, empowered or either has a lasso around the neck, however you look at it, but to make sure that, you know, they're providing setting the policies and driving the policies down at every business unit level to make sure that, you know, the company doesn't get compromised, right? It's very hard to do because typically all of these things happen at a distributed level and there are people using different tools and things happen, right? So how do you like provide a kind of a platform approach with lots of use cases that you talked about, like key management, encryption, secrets management, tokenization, you know, et cetera, so that the CISOs can kind of manage all of this stuff in a much more simplistic manner. And of course, then take it down to the constituents, you know, in lines of business or the chief data officer's organization, et cetera. So that's kind of at a macro view. Then underneath that, I mean, you know, the way to think about it is kind of the places where your data, where you have data in the enterprise, right? So you start with that kind of picture architecturally. So you have data in databases. Customers, large enterprises have hundreds of databases, right? Oracle, Microsoft SQL, MongoDB, et cetera, et cetera. You have data going into cloud and could be in cloud databases, or it could be in data warehouses, right? It's like Snowflake and Databricks and in a BigQuery, et cetera, et cetera. So you have like data going there. And then we've talked about data going into SaaS, right? Like ServiceNow, Salesforce, et cetera. So you've got data going into multiple places. Then you've got, you know, storage arrays, NetApp, EMC, et cetera, right? So you've got data going in various places. So now, depending on the regulations and, you know, depending on if the data is sensitive, not sensitive, you have to apply different types of tools for it. So at a base level, if you're going into cloud, it could just be cloud key management, where you're in control of the keys and, you know, you're encrypting, let's say, database in the cloud, as an example. So you would use key management to do that, external key management to do that. If you are have a lot of sensitive PII data, like credit card information, et cetera, then you may also use tokenization on top of that, right? So then you'd add that layer into the equation. If you're in a DevSecOps team and you're doing CI/CD, you're creating your pipelines, to cloud, you have lots of credentials that get passed around in the process. You want to save those credentials in a secure manner. A lot of times they're not saved in a secure manner. That, you know, people put them in just some object storage or here or there, wherever, right? And that's how compromises happen a lot of times. So how do you provide them with a way of doing what we call secrets management, right? So that becomes a use case. Then you have like I was example of Databricks or a Snowflake, where you have your kind of data organization or chief data organization, where they have to do analytics to cloud, but they have sensitive data they have to take to Snowflake to do analytics on, but they have to obfuscate the sensitive data. So how do you do that seamlessly? So you have to kind of have a holistic kind of view around the enterprise, where all your data is in the enterprise. And when I say in the enterprise, it's also in the cloud, which is a virtual enterprise, right? And then what is the right, based on your policy, based on the vertical you're in, like if you're in healthcare or financial or retail, what are the requirements by country, by state, in some cases in the US, that you may have to meet, right? And then you use the right tools in the tool chest that we provide to obfuscate that, right? And at the highest level, of course, protecting data in use, which is if you're running stuff in cloud, right?
In some of those areas, I think, again, it's the granularity that you apply to it as well. So I've seen your transparent data encryption capabilities where you can encrypt down to the rows of a table, and then you can use very sophisticated methods to ensure that only particular applications could access it, particular people, et cetera. So again, you have incredible depth in every one of these categories. Secure code signing, like there's so many places you operate. I think one of the kind of really exciting ones is this idea of in-use.
Yes.
What you're doing in the secure enclave space, I think it's pretty fascinating. And on top of that, I think people that are exploring this will appreciate how complex it is to do without something like Fortanix, whether it's rewriting the application, setting up the infrastructure, making sure that you're enforcing some of the cryptographic standards you want, even lifecycle management. All of that is actually fairly complex. And can you walk us through a little bit on how Fortanix approaches the idea of these secure enclaves, because in use is just a tremendous use case.
Yeah, maybe let me use a couple of examples, custom examples that might, or use cases that might kind of help paint the picture. So, fundamentally, of course, from a technology perspective, we leverage the confidential CPUs, from Intel, from AMD, and even, AWS Nitro. So we support, the various cloud providers, right? And then on top of that, of course, we've kind of built our orchestration and management layer, right? Because the whole idea is that make it easy for customers, folks to migrate their workloads into the confidential VMs, manage the lifecycle of that, things like attestation, et cetera, right? Make sure they keep compliance. So that's kind of at a platform level. Now, from a use case, think of, two things that I'll just use two examples. One that's top of mind for everybody these days is, AI, right? And if you think about an AI use case, you have a model that you're building in AI. A model needs to get trained on some data, right? So some training needs to happen, and then the model can be used for inferencing, right? So there's a huge requirement that data that gets exposed to the model be done in a sensitive, in a compliant manner, right? So and so that even if somebody tries to compromise you while you're doing the training, they can't get access to the sensitive data, right? So how do you do that? So that's where something like confidential computing, plays a very important role in providing that. And we have a real life customer like our customer Beekeeper AI. They leverage our platform and it runs on Microsoft. They're working with drug companies that are bringing models for drug discovery, and they need access to sensitive data from like UCSF Hospital or UC Irvine Hospital, right? And typically the hospitals will not provide this sensitive data. They'll obfuscate a lot of stuff and not expose all the data to the model because of they're worried about the data being compromised. But what ends up happening is when you do that, you obfuscate a lot of the data. The model training is not as great, right? Because it doesn't have all the information that it needs for training. With confidential compute, you bring the data into an enclave, you bring the model into an enclave, right? You can completely be transparent about the data now, because even if you get compromised, everything is encrypted in use, right? So now the training data is more valuable, right? Because it's richer. So that's one use case. Second one, what is the big use case for cloud cloud migrations? Customers are moving data to cloud at a rapid rate. So now there is a need where, and let's take the 80-20 rule, 80% of your data may be not be very sensitive, 20% might be very sensitive data, sensitive databases, et cetera, right? How do you make sure that for the 20% that is sensitive, instead of moving it to kind of standard VMs in the cloud, you can move them to confidential VMs in the cloud, right? And that's where our product can help kind of orchestrate, the VMs and the confidential VMs in the cloud, migrate the confidential VMs in the cloud, manage the lifecycle of those confidential VMs in the cloud, make sure if things change, move, that we can manage the compliance posture of those sensitive data, right? So all of that, and this is all happening in use, right? So those are the two use cases.
Can I actually build on something? And maybe this was more just a general question here. That confidential AI example that you provided, Fayaz, is a pretty, got my cogs turning here. For example, Snowflake has its own ecosystem now that's evolving, right? Not only in terms of different products that integrate with Snowflake data warehouses, but on the back end. So client may use its Snowflake data warehouses internally, have those encrypted. But to your point, leveraging confidential AI, there's back-end use cases where that organization is sharing data with other parties, right? And there is this concept of data security posture management where you know where your data is going. That's one part of it. But the other is, well, again, how are you encrypting it in end-to-end and allowing for this kind of federated access to be secure and uncompromised? I think that is like a very compelling and unexplored domain for many organizations. And I think this is just amazing in terms of Fortanix being able to support that.
Sadhbir, it's a very big use case, by the way. So what happened, and again, I'll use custom examples of a bank or a retailer where, let's say they're taking data into a Snowflake. Mm-hmm. And they want to, so one is, of course, they have to obfuscate the sensitive data, let's say credit card information, social security numbers, other things, age, if there's personal data. But then what happens is that you now have the data in Snowflake, it's obfuscated. Now let's assume that you have, if you're a retailer and you have a whole bunch of suppliers and you want to share pieces of the data with a supplier. So you don't need to share, share all the unencrypted data. You can only share parts of it, right? Based on the supplier that, in terms of what data they may care about, right? So how do you do that? So this multi-party sharing concept, right, is something that we support in the product, that you can kind of encrypt data on the way in, decrypt only a piece of it to show, based on the policy of what you want to show, which supplier, et cetera, right? So that is a very important requirement for customers. Same thing in banking, if customers that want to take data to Snowflake, then they obfuscate all the fields, but if there's, let's say, one of their agents in the branch that needs to get access to a customer record, they don't need to have the full data. They can only see the last four digits of your social security, as an example, right? So you can set all these kinds of rules and say, only if it's Sadhbir coming in, only expose this. If it's Darren coming in, only expose that, depending on what the business requirements might be.
So that's phenomenal. So if I can extrapolate further, so that's from the external side of use cases. How do organizations apply maybe Fortanix's encryption methodologies, rules from an internal perspective? Where, yes, one group is also leveraging certain data warehouses or data stores And so it's just internal to the organization for purposes of, you know, application development, what have you. So is it suffice to say that, you know, what you can certainly mask the data, you can create synthetic data and all that, those traditional kind of aspects of what we might call as data masking and obfuscation, or going back to the lowest common denominator saying, hey, you can do all those things, or if you can just encrypt it point to point and these people have the keys, well, you solved a lot of things and people can actually train their models or use the actual source data and to, within the organization. Is that entirely valid too?
No, absolutely. And we have this something in the platform that is very, very popular called quorum controls. And so once you, let's say, you know, you set up a key to tokenize some amount of data, you can say who can detokenize it, who cannot detokenize it, right? Who can make any changes? And to make the change, you can say, well, if Sadhguru is making the change, he cannot just do it on his own. Darren needs to bless it, Fayaz needs to bless it, and some other app needs to bless it. So you can do like this and or of combination of things to make sure that, like, you know, nobody can, like, you know what happens is, like, you don't want to change a key and break something, right, without having due checks or change a piece of data without, you know, having the due kind of policy checks in place. So all of that is kind of built in the platform, allowing that level of flexibility. And that's actually one of our big, you know, big selling points, and customers love the quorum controls that the product provides.
Sharing, not showing. I like everything I've heard here so far. One of my most favorite things, and I'll close on this, is one of the more complex scenarios I see customers struggling with is when they're trying to either do test data management or synthetics. It's hard to preserve referential integrity, semantic integrity. It's hard to preserve kind of frequency distributions and all of these other concepts when I'm trying to create this test environment. What Fortanix allows is you can bring your data, production data, call it, and you said it before, and you can bring your models into these secure domains, these secure enclaves. Now you don't have to worry about trying to mess with foreign key mappings. You don't have to worry about whether or not some of the data tolerances are within acceptable range and trying to obfuscate it in such a way that it can't be de-identified and yet your aggregations still work. Like, it takes a lot to do test environment management on applications that we're seeing these days. So bringing these things into a secure enclave where you can just operate is a phenomenal approach. It's one that's differentiated. I think Fortanix, I mean, I've seen it. Like, people may play with things like homomorphic. They may play with MPC. But the reality is it's been around for a long time, but it's very slow. It's still nascent. You can't do complex assignments with those kinds of technologies. But you can with Fortanix. Bring it into these enclaves. You already said you support so many different environments. Right, so you are operating where the customer is trying to do some of this test environment management, these models, et cetera. So I would encourage people to look at Fortanix for this reason. Otherwise, I guarantee there's going to be a lot of lost cycles trying to figure out how to get my data into a format that makes sense, that I can still compute against at scale. Exceptionally difficult, but doing this in use is a phenomenal way to approach it.
No, totally agree, Darren, and thank you for that. But, you know, look, I mean, homomorphic encryption has, firstly, it's very slow. The technology is not there, and it's limited to very few use cases, and that's the challenge, and that's why that technology hasn't really taken off. You keep reading about it, but it's mostly experimental stuff. The advantage of confidential computing in the way we do it is we're using general purpose compute, right? Which is freely available in all the cloud providers and hosting providers, et cetera, right? So customers want that are in cloud, have access to all these, you know, now confidential VMs. In the past, standard VMs, now we have confidential VMs. And the cloud providers are going to, of course, expose all of this at scale, right? Across the globe in various countries, regions, et cetera. So clearly, you know, the availability is there for customers to secure that data very easily at scale, right? Leveraging, of course, the cloud providers as underlying platform, leveraging Fortinet as the kind of the orchestration, multi-cloud orchestration platform for all of that. And it, you know, it just fits into the whatever the standard operating model is for cloud, as an example, that they use, right? If they go into Azure or AWS or a combination of those, you know, we can support it, right? So I think that's very so that's the advantage now. And I think, you know, we're already seeing the amount of focus now from AWS on Nitro and Microsoft on confidential computing, you know, the infrastructure they're building out, right? That this is going to be, I think we're going to see a customers really starting to ramp up exponentially on this in, you know, in the coming like quarters and years.
I agree. I'd also say, sorry, I said that was my last point. The other point, I made mention to it earlier, but I want to bring it back, is your ability to flip the kill switch. So you opened the statement about how many SaaS providers an enterprise can deal with. We're in the hundreds. And at any point, because of your workflow capability and tying into a SIM, that if there is a compromised activity, even via automation that has been detected, you can throw the kill switch to immediately render all of that data useless.
That's right.
In any of those connections across any number of environments. I think that can't be overstated as well. You've really built a management layer that works in today's expectations, in today's security needs.
Absolutely. I know. Thank you. Again, you know, in Europe, like I said, it's a compliance requirement, right? But I think it's good hygiene for all customers to do, right? So I think it's going to get more and more pervasive, and that's why also the cloud providers are supporting it, right? Like Google supports it, AWS supports it. They support the notion of this external key management or key services, as they call it, right? So where customers have control, and it allows them the kind of the separation of church and state, you know, in a sense. So,
and with that, we'll have to use a kill switch here to bring this wonderful conversation with Fayaz and Fortinet to an end. Fayaz, thank you so much for joining us. We hope that, you know, this discussion brings this whole domain to the forefront of our clients, our customers, or for that matter, at large here, any organization. And should anybody have questions, please reach out to us, reach out to Fortinet, and we're happy to connect you guys as well. Thank you again.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.